Wonder where all this will end.
It could end right now if you keep your opinion to yourself.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Plays. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 25, The Burning Couch. Really? And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, The Burning Couch, really.
Yes, starring... Oh, I was going to make up a fake Farrah Fawcett, but she's already so I can't... With Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah. Schmagers. Yeah. Yeah. That's not even the worst of these, alas.
No.
It's in the conversation, though. Mm-hmm. Speaking of conversations.
Featuring Sophie's pick.
oh, my God. Noah.
The Killing Park.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
Schindler's to do.
Yeah, Schindler's to do.
All right, sorry. We're done.
Okay. Don't get up, we'll fire ourselves. But before that happens, there is no Again With This this week, since December has the nerve to have five Fridays. However, start looking forward to Again With This episode 78. That drops January 7th. We'll be watching Heather Locklear on Muppets Tonight.
Ooh.
I feel like Muppets Tonight, like Muppets Tonight.
It's on YouTube. It's linked in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. And you can join us at patreon.com/againwiththis for that and many, many other exegeses. Just kidding. We're not that fancy. Mm-hmm. Of Melrose and 90210 adjacent content.
Indeed.
Please join us. We'd love it.
Yes. But we're here to talk about The Burning Couch. Starting with our D plot, Alan improbably makes a big decision. At the hospital, Matt tries to find some bravado to tell David about Alan's wedding. Matt says Alan made a choice and so did Matt to move on. David tries to get Matt to admit he's angry, which of course he is, but there's nothing for him to do about it. But David feels Matt can get revenge by outing Alan to the tabloids. I don't see a queer person at this time advising that. Sorry.
No, I don't either. I also don't see a queer person punctuating it with a Dawson Leary nostril flare, but
yeah,
there's a lot that I've forgotten about this period of Melrose.
True.
For my own sanity, as it turns out.
Yeah. Fortunately, Matt agrees with us and says Alan messed up Matt's life, but Matt still cares about Alan, and Alan will get plenty of punishment without Matt's help. Some number of days later, the same nurse who was so salty to Kimberly's bad realtor a few episodes ago has to be the one to break the news to Matt that a tabloid has outed Alan, illustrated with that photo of the two of them from the dance-a-thon. And David unluckily shows up just then, so Matt pulls him aside to accuse him of leaking it. David denies it and furthermore tells Matt to quit crying to him about Alan. You were the one who kept inserting yourself in their business, my guy.
Literally.
Yeah. This is a weird turn for the character to be like, I'm not interested in talking about this anymore. Like,
yeah, it's a shame. This actor is good and cute, and I wish that they had been able to do something else with this kind of storyline at this time in human history, but they just did not have the balls.
So then Matt is opening his apartment door to Alan, who decided to come back early from his Hawaiian honeymoon. And it turns out he planted the story on himself. He didn't just quit the wedding when it was happening. He went this far. And he says this was his only way out. He realized he couldn't pull off the sham marriage and that he had lost Matt, who was right about everything. And he just wanted Matt to know he's back and that Gloria fired him. So Alan is back to square one, but claims he's happy to start over in his career and in his life, which would be brighter if Matt were in it. And he asks Matt to think about it and just wanders off. Just a note, this guy didn't have a bank account 3 months ago. Probably also does not have a cell phone. And Matt doesn't know where he's living now. So I'm going to guess it won't be easy for these two to find each other again. But I could be wrong.
Mm.
And that's it on Alan for this episode. It's very perfunctory.
No. And a question mark?
Yes. Yeah. Moving on to the plot line that gives us our very offensive title, Betsy turns firebug. At the beach house, Kimberly is chopping vegetables under Anson Williams' director credit, which you can see in the visual aids, when Michael comes in and acts cold to her because of Peter's injury, which we will get to. Michael is covering his schedule, so he has to get back. Clip two.
So you just came home to change?
Why, should I be expecting something else? Didn't think so. After that fiasco last night. You know, it's funny, I always thought our sexual fantasy games would include, say, me.
Michael, I'm sorry. I don't know what got into me. I just sort of lost it.
Yeah, putting it mildly.
It's just... I don't know. I get into this panic.
Because of me? We've been through that.
Yeah, I know. I thought so, too. It's just, so much has happened all at once, and, I just get confused. It's weird. That's all.
Well, you know, if it's something else, you can tell me.
No. I'm over it.
You sure?
Sure.
I mean, I'm already so tired of this plot line, and we're like at the first of 17 bends in the road with it, unfortunately. But she is doing a pretty good job, I think, given how outré it is.
I agree. You know, there are a limited number of people in this cast they could have given this to.
Mm-hmm. And I'm actually a little surprised they didn't try to give it to fucking Billy, but maybe they did and they were like, oh, that's the same expression. How is anyone supposed to tell that anything? We can't give him different lipstick. I don't. Well, okay, let's give it to Marcia Cross. And like, it's clear that they're just giving her this like really, you know, like it's juicy, I guess, and she does a reasonably textured job with it, but it's just like the character has run its course. Please acknowledge this and find some other way.
Yeah.
It's not this dirty birdie homage that isn't well enough written to justify how ripped off it is. Anyway.
Especially since, you know, speaking of preposterous things they've given this woman to act, she's supposed to be training to be a psychiatrist, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if she's worried about being found out by people in her social circle, I don't know, find one of the other, I'm going to say, three or four doctors in the greater Los Angeles area to talk to. Like, go to a different hospital, go to an office unrelated to the hospital.
Go to your probation or parole officer that you still should have.
Yeah. Anyway, none of that happens. And that night, no. Betsy wakes up on the couch with her bra out and gets flustered, cursing Kimberly in her slatternly ways and also Michael. And when she decides she hasn't and can't get the couch clean enough, which to be fair, it never will be, the things that have happened on it. She takes it out to the deck, pushes it over the railing onto the sand, covers it in lighter fluid, and sets it on fire. And it's a choice. But you know, again, Marcia Cross is acting the shit out of it, including when they have to like have her face showing through the flames. It's very dramatic.
I really wish that someone would do like a joke podcast of what it was like to be the neighbors on the beach. Like, there's Jane on the beach, like washing out to sea. There's a burning couch that it's like day 41. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
When Michael returns the next morning, Kimberly's sitting on the deck, and after some pleasantries, he inquires as to the location of the couch. First, she's like, what? But then says that since it was a relic of the Sydney era, she ordered a new one and she's going to make him breakfast in bed. But he would rather get some of that fresh beach air, which is when he looks down and sees what is left of the couch. And she claims it's from a bonfire that some kids set, but you can see the springs in the couch frame. Like, it's clearly a couch. And yeah. Michael is, you know, not convinced because it's not convincing.
No.
And then Kimberly decides, actually, she should talk to Peter about Betsy's latest doings. After all, Peter prescribes medication. We don't learn what. drugs. And if Betsy returns, Kimberly should call Peter immediately. And I guess, you know, she isn't because she doesn't want to risk her job or whatever. But again, bitch, see an actual fucking shrink.
God, seriously, there might be a couple.
Yeah, he is. Work. He is not one. He never has been one. We've discussed it. Some number of nights later, Kimberly slips out of bed in the middle of the night, or rather, excuse me, it is Betsy muttering about Kimberly keeping such bad company and specifically calling Michael a pig. Fair. She goes to the kitchen and returns to the bedroom with a gigantic knife. But just as she's about to strike, he wakes up. And when he says Kimberly's name and asks what's wrong, since he's rubbing his eyes, she has time to lower her knife wielding hand before he sees it. Either Kimberly comes back to herself or Betsy covers, saying that she heard a noise outside. And when Michael goes to check it out, she hides the knife in her lingerie drawer. Well, he'll never look there. I mean, maybe he won't. But that's where we leave it for these two. Yikers.
Or three, I guess.
Right. Good point. Moving on to our B plot. Jake gets revenge on Jane sexfully at Shooters. Joe exposits to Jake that she has been showered with freelance work since Richard canned everyone, but for some reason she misses Richard. And Jake squints at her like, what? Like the rest of us, he does not get Richard's appeal either for Joe or for Jane, who just hired him. And since Joe knows why that happened, she's like, maybe Jane believes in his ability. Jake says Jane fights her own battles and he believes in her. And with an edge, Joe says everyone has a dark side, even Saint Jane, but stops short of telling him exactly why Jane hired Richard and leaves before she spills. And when we see the next, Jake is storming into her apartment to accuse her and Richard of conspiring to ruin Jane's life. I guess it took Jake an entire day to stew about the hints that Joe was dropping and follow up on them. Like, combine these into one scene, everybody.
But yeah. God.
He refuses to consider that Jane might be guilty of anything. So finally, Joe shows him the incriminating photo from the fashion show. And Jake doesn't know what to think about Joe using the photos to blackmail Jane into hiring Richard and eventually maybe reconcile with Richard herself. Clip three.
I was with her that night.
She was out of her head.
Yeah. And I was out of mine. Think she could rise above Richard's crap or yours. You people are so screwed up.
Yeah, maybe we are, but you can't say anything.
Oh, sure. Another secret.
Jane, the woman I love, flooded a building, but just ignore that.
Whether you know it or not, you just blew this thing wide open.
Jake!
Get out of my way.
You just blew this thing wide open. Okay, Scoop.
What thing? Yeah. Also, guys, it's Jane.
Yeah.
Wrap it up.
Honestly,
someone in this plot line dies. Let's get to the Dead Works Factory, please. Please. This season is way too long.
Yeah, it's starting to really get frustrating how much they have to reset for the new viewers with every episode. Like, Jake has been around Joe this whole time. He asked Joe to help Jane and she did. Like, he knows that Jane isn't, or that Joe is not the prime mover in all of this fighting.
Right. And also, I don't know. Like, now he knows that he's like, get out of my way. And I don't know what he's planning to do exactly. Well, like, get a bullhorn. But then he doesn't do anything.
Well, this is so stupid. Yes. So let's cut to that scene because it takes place at a cocktail party at a retail buyer's conference. Richard is standing alone when Joe and her very cute dress, you can see in the visual aids, find him. Full disclosure, raid the dress. I would lose the bow. It has like a bow in the front. But the collar and sleeve detailing are, like, very cute. You have to go look. Normally, I hate
halters.
There's
a Rick Rack homage. It's very cute. Love it.
Looks great on her. Richard's glad to be working again. Joe's happy for him. And then Jane in her very sharp suit. Everyone's looking good in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Come over looking for Jake. Richard says he's at the bar and that he seems pissed. And when Jane gets there, she finds out it's true. Clip four.
Hey, hiding out?
Trying to stay out of the way of the Jane train.
What does that mean?
That means that I'm having a miserable time, and if you cared at all, you would just let me rot in my stew, so to speak.
Hon, exactly how much have you had to drink?
Not so much that I'm going to shoot my mouth off, lucky you.
Okay. I'm cutting you off.
You don't tell me what to do. Understand? I'm not going to be one of your lackeys.
Maybe you should tell me where this is coming from.
Better yet, I'll tell you where it's going. Nowhere. I'm not right for you. And this whole joke of a relationship is finished.
Okay. This motherfucker put on a suit and went all the way down there just to avoid Jane until she found him and then tell her she sucked, but not why. Like, okay, drama queen. Like, why did you go there if you weren't going to say why you were mad?
Yeah. And also, it's a work event for her.
For her.
You work at a bar?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just stay in your bar and get drunk? Yes. And if you're gonna pour yourself another, like, manly, I'm just gonna drown my sorrows, like, she can't storm off, she's working,
right?
So you pour yourself another shot and then you sip it like it's a cordial. Guy who works at a bar and parks his motorcycle on the pool apron.
Oh, that's some tart cider. Yes. Very dumb. Very dumb.
My asshole's not the only thing puckering. Oh, guys.
But there is a reason he has to be there. And here it is. As soon as Jane has slunk off, a cute brunette who looks like Bridget Moynihan, Rose McGowan, and Laura Elena Herring from Mulholland Drive all had a baby. And she hits on him. Clip 5.
I'd offer to buy you a drink, but sounds like a sensitive subject.
Well, I'm a sensitive guy, right?
I hope not.
Jake Hansen. The most insensitive SOB you're ever going to meet.
Claire Duncan, who could care less?
Couldn't care less. Jake, do not sleep with this woman. But
she is hot, though.
She is very. They established that A, she has a room in the hotel, and B, she will fuck him with no strings attached. She gives him a key card, but doesn't tell him what room she's in. Like, this is not how key cards work. They're not printed. You have to have a little folder. We've all been to hotels. But she promises to make him forget all about that girl before sidling off. And then Richard and Jake pass each other in the hall, and Jake just glares but doesn't say anything, like, he's me and Richard is an unmasked person at the grocery store. That is an example from true life. And then Richard pointedly watches Jake get into an elevator, so put a pin in that. Somehow Jake figured out the room number, and when he lets himself in, she's already down to lingerie. And even though, as I already said, she was pretty clear about it at the bar, he confirms there will be no strings attached, but it's so that she can answer, just these, indicating her spaghetti straps, and then drop the slip and get to fucking.
Mm-hmm. That a girl.
Yeah. So the next day, Jane finds Jake at Shooters. He was drunk last night, but he stands by everything he said and finally tells her what he knows about the tiki torch, thanks to Joe. She assumed that if he found out, he would dump her, and evidently she was right. She does not add, but she loves him, and whatever he decides about them, she will never lie to him again. And he seems like he's about to tell her he fucked someone else, but instead just pauses for 20 minutes and says he loves her too. She hugs him and unwittingly twists the knife, saying he's never lied to her. She trusts him so much, et cetera, as he guiltily rolls his eyes over her shoulder. And she promises he'll be able to trust her too. And he assures her everything will work out. But will it? Because that night, he comes to the garage to tell Jane dinner's ready and suggests maybe they should just bone on her work table. But they're not alone. Her new assistant's there. And Jake is like, send him home. But it's not a him, it's a her. And let's all say it together. It's Claire.
What?
I know. And Jane makes introductions. Claire stays cool, but Jake, the legendary swordsman, has no poker face about the situation at all, which is hilarious. You can see in the visual aids.
God, yeah.
So then Jane says,
he's like the about to barf emoji come to life. Perhaps he's seen his own hairstyle. You can see that in the visual aids.
Yeah, they really seem to have backed off this Caesar real quick. They're like already sweeping it back. Like, oh no, this was a mistake. It's like Brandon with the boot brush from season 4.
Yeah. Except, or like in some scenes, they're like, oh, right. And then they'll comb like part of it forward. Yeah. And it's like this very obvious diamond on the top of his head. Mm-hmm. Oh God, it's bad. Yeah. Anyway,
Jane sends Claire home for the night and tries to start something up again while Jake looks over her shoulder very guiltily. And that's where we leave these fucking idiots for another week. Finally, our A plot. Everyone wants to get their mitts on Bobby's company, including Bobby. At the hospital, Alicia finds Amanda, who recaps, leave it to professionals, what happened with Peter and Bobby and the railing in the last episode. And Alicia snits that all the men in Amanda's life are violent, like, hey man, both of those dudes are in your life too, lest you forget. But
yeah, really, not the burn you think it was, Alicia.
No kidding. So then we see Peter with his arm all bandaged up, peeking out a door into the hallway and getting worried, seeing Alicia and Amanda together. So Michael comes out of an elevator just then, already thinking ahead to all the legal awards Peter could get off being, quote, crippled by a Parisi, end quote. And ignoring that, Peter tells Michael to get rid of the ladies. Michael is obviously familiar with the old girl, two girlfriend shuffle, as he puts it. And then is surprised to see a cop there to take Peter's statement. Peter wanted to make sure Bobby gets what he deserves. And Michael, great wingman, tells the ladies Peter's okay, just a sprain and mild concussion. And competitively, Amanda and Alicia both announce they want to see him. But Michael says he's going to be in x-ray for a while, so they should go home. And then they both competitively declare they'll wait. And Michael freezes in panic because he was not prepared for that, which is very funny. And then, for some reason, Sydney is at Bobby's. She relays Peter's diagnosis, not sure who put her in the loop or, like, who knew she was there to call her. Like, does she have a beeper? I don't understand how she knows this, but anyway. She is wearing in this scene pretty much exactly what I was wearing in the mid-90s. Red sweater, plaid kilt, black tights, boots. Mm-hmm. Looks great.
Yep.
For once, Bobby, knowing that a hand injury could potentially end Peter's surgical career, heads to the hospital with Sydney trotting after her, trying to talk him out of it. And when Bobby finally asks what we all want to know, why is she there? She says she knows what it's like to be trampled by Peter and his squad. And Bobby shouldn't wake up one day and realize the only friends he has are all in the courtyard crew. Love that as a group. Mm. And then a cop car pulls up, sirens wailing. Bobby briefly resists, but is soon arrested for assaulting Peter while Sydney protests. And from the backseat, Bobby tells her to stay out of it, which I don't see that journey for Sydney. Mm-mm, ever.
No, ever.
Life. So at D&D, where Billy is still doing suits with t-shirts and I am still hating it, seeing the visual aids, he dumps a pile of accounts on Allison's desk that he says are too small time for him to handle anymore. And she's sarcastic, but doesn't actually go so far as to tell him she is not taking them and that he should fuck off. But she does instead try to tell him to quit being such a jerk. He's not only acting like Brooke, he has become her, except Brooke never did any work. The only client she brought in was her dad, and then he would not even work with her. So when Billy is like, Brooke was never this successful, I hate it. But I have to agree, he's right. Like, this is the problem with this heel turn storyline. Like, it doesn't fundamentally make sense.
Yeah. And it doesn't make sense. And then on top of that, the way that it's being, quote, acted, unquote, yeah, is like opaque.
Yeah.
I guess is the kindest way to put that.
That's,
so,
that's,
yeah, it's like, what, I mean, even if the motivation were there on the page, which I don't think it is,
yeah,
it's almost impossible for this particular thespian to convey it. Mm-hmm. So why are we still doing this?
Mm-hmm.
But we are.
We are. Allison accuses Billy of being in denial, but he just tells her to page him with questions if she has any and takes off. So then Peter meets Alicia for a fancy lunch and is maybe not staying. Clip 6.
I went out of this stupid charade, Alicia. Now we screwed over Bobby with the senator photos. All good and well. We even had some damn good sex along the way, but I've had it. I can't keep pretending we're having a real relationship no matter how much you blackmail me.
My So full of blustery conviction, but stupid. Unless you want me to tell Amanda what you did to Bobby and destroy any hopes you have of a future with her.
I love her, Alicia.
Sorry. I can't let you go.
You still have some kind of hope for you and me?
No. That evaporated weeks ago. Truth is, it's all down to business at this point. I'm still $2 million short for the takeover.
Well, so go raise $2 million. Don't hold me hostage.
What if this charade, as you like to call it, is up for sale?
For the coincidental asking price of, say, $2 million. That's very amusing. Now, where the hell am I going to raise that kind of money?
$2 million buys your freedom, Peter. It's my final offer. Take it. Or keep playing the game.
This is preposterous. Like, she's hot as shit. We've complained about her bad styling by the show's, like, hairstylist and makeup team. Mm-hmm. Even with that, she's
still triumphing.
She's gorgeous. She's obviously a criminal mastermind. Why would she want to waste her time with a man who's not interested in her? And if, like, she's trying to get the money out of him, she would know he doesn't have it.
Like, yeah.
This makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, maybe her logic is, like, if this is a surgeon who also thinks he can do the work of a trained psychiatrist, maybe he thinks in addition to doctor, he can fundraise.
Okay. Yeah.
This is the only thing I could think of.
I mean, she ends up being right, spoiler, but it's still, like, as a premise for the episode, it's so strange.
Well, and also, the way that Jack Wagner is playing it, even Peter Burns is like, the fuck are we doing?
Yes.
He's just looking at her like, so explain this to me again.
Yeah.
And she like rolls in a whiteboard and he's like, all right.
Yeah.
Let's just play it out. Like, I don't know. It's funny to me that even the character is like, this makes no sense. You're too hot for this.
Yes, totally.
We're like, saying.
Even if the theory is he may not personally have $2 million to give me, but he could get it. Like, she has other ways to blackmail him. Like, he was complicit in this, too. You know, mm-hmm. She could threaten to get him out of it. And she already has said, like, it's everything is going to trace back to you anyway. So why would she also, on top of that, be like, and keep fucking me even if you hate my guts, you know?
Well, and if she knew enough to help do this setup with the senator or whatever,
right.
Then she knows, like, other people in that world who she can team up with to do the bust out or whatever it is she's trying to do. I mean, I can't imagine she actually wants to run a cable company.
No.
It's a sucker bet. But anyway, it really does not matter.
It sure doesn't. These are the terms for the episode, whether we like them or not, and we don't.
Yes.
Over to the cop shop, where Sydney and her weird suit are bailing. I can't even describe it. See in the visual aids. It's shiny. It has, like, a texture. It looks like wood grain.
It's like iridescent teal. It's like if a mood ring became a suit and a matching tiny purse.
Okay, you can describe it, and good job.
Great color on her, but oh, it's so 90s.
Ooh, it's so aging. It's like some Green Acre shit. Anyway, they're bailing out Bobby with, by the way, a check from the medical practice, LOL. Bobby doesn't know why Sydney thinks he can't take care of himself, but he can. And, I mean, you're currently in a police station after getting arrested, but go off, which is basically what she says. Clip 7.
Just think of me as your guardian angel. I give and give and give and ask nothing in return.
I don't believe in angels.
Neither do I. It sounded great, didn't it?
Love her.
I mean, I like these two. She always finds a way, even in some, like, stupid plot line, to be like, I am going to create chemistry whether it exists or not.
Yes.
Like, I'm not sure they ever get her together with Billy, and I really hope they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even, like, this is another case where he's playing it like, why is this happening? Like, don't sell out the writing by having the character hang a light on how weird this is.
Yeah.
Like, we have enough problems.
It's true. But also, like, in one of the episodes that you weren't here for last month, like, there's a moment where he comes back in after throwing her out of his office. He comes back in laughing, and it's not clear if this was, like, Bobby laughing at what a crazy person she is, or John Enos laughing at Laura Layton's performance. And it's fine either way, because he's very amused by her.
Yeah. I mean, the only problem here is, like, she's even teenier than Lockley, or, like, can we not find an actor in this cast that weighs a third of him?
Yeah.
Please? Yeah.
Well, there's a very funny shot in the next episode, which we will get to, with regard to that. Over drinks, Amanda encourages Peter to drop the charges against Bobby so that they can both be free of him, and Peter agrees if she will tell him why she keeps looking at Billy, who's in the same restaurant with Leif, the vodka client. Billy already landed the account, so Amanda doesn't know why he's still pushing, and Peter declares that he's going to go find out and blusters over, congratulating Billy and pretending to know who Leif is, which he technically does, but only because Amanda just told him, claims Midnight Sun Vodka is his favorite, wishes he had bought some shares in the company a few years ago, and Leif says it's not too late to invest, but it might be for Peter. His capital is tied up in a cable company. And Leif is interested because he happens to own a satellite company in Germany, which Billy knows about, so obviously this is his next target. But Peter's just mentioned $2 million and a share someone could really look into when Amanda appears. And when she and Peter have left, Leif asks Billy whether buying into this cable company seems like a good investment. And as long as Billy gets a piece of the action, it does. This seems too convenient, but again, I don't care to like dig into the vicissitudes of it.
Yeah, like we're in the clubhouse turn of this season. Let's just get all the get the chessboard set up, even if the pieces are made of, like, you know, poo. It's fine. It's fine.
So the next day, Bobby comes to the cable company to see that Alicia's moved into his old office, and he reminds her that she is his lawyer. She is still?
What?
And asks why she's not taking his calls. Like, is there someone else who works in this office taking messages? But she says she's in the middle of the acquisition, so it would be a conflict of interest. And she might also say, I know you're broke, remember, but doesn't. And he says the only conflict is that she's in love with Peter, but she insists she's trying to salvage the deal so she can't be associated with Bobby anymore. And he says that's fine. She can just give him his check. But his assets are in a holding account. The FCC won't release until they're done unraveling whatever he did with the senator. We were told the investigation was over, but whatever. And Bobby's latest arrest didn't help, I guess. Clip 8.
Investigating a senator could take years. I put everything I had into this company.
I know, and I'm sorry, but it's out of my hands. Bobby, don't!
This is still my office! I have to give them back anything! Right, you think I'm gonna leave any for them, huh?
Bobby, stop! Do I look like I can afford to bail you out again? Besides, I'm double parked in the white zone.
You bailed him out?
Only because his so-called other friends seem to have vaporized off the planet.
Well, because the two of you are so chummy, you better get him out of here before I call the cops!
Fine. Bobby, come on, let's go.
What the hell with it?
You really should have returned his phone calls.
Oh, yeah? And you keep that little upturned nose out of it!
Not a chance.
How does Alicia even know who she is? I guess from the office, from the medical office.
Yeah. I mean, watching him just sort of like destroy the, you know, Bobby Smash, like, oh no, not the giant stack of video tapes. And then the Boston accent completely careening out of control. Like, I got a number. How do you like them apples? Oh, God. Guys.
Over to D&D, where Leif and Billy are businessing. Leif is offering a finder's fee for this, whatever he's doing with Peter, but Billy's happy to have the cable company as a client. And Amanda walks by in time to see Leif give Billy a check for $2 million, which Billy is to pass on to Peter and his associates, and Billy's on it. And when Leif has gone, Amanda comes in to casually ask what's happening. He says he just landed a great account, but D&D was already representing Bobby's cable company. Is this for the German company? D&D is doing work in Europe / foreign languages. Business.
It really, yeah.
Clip 9.
Which means nothing if it doesn't work out and D&D loses all credibility.
Well, I won't be going down alone because it was Peter who brought up the deal.
Peter? Last night?
Yeah, Leaf is going to finance the cable company, and then I'm going to... Well, D&D will manage the million-plus advertising account.
This is unethical. I was a partner in this company. It's all screwed up with the FCC. If this company goes down, we lose Leaf.
He made the decision to invest. Always keep the client happy. Wasn't that your advice? Celebration dinner's tomorrow. I'll pick you up at 7.
Pass. Keep me out of this.
It wasn't an invitation. You are head of the department, and Leaf is expecting you to be there. Oh, do me a favor. Make sure that Allison and her Snow White opinion stays home.
I don't think Billy can order his boss to do shit outside of company time. A. B. How would this possibly blow back on D&D if the deal falls through? Like, who would care?
Yeah. Just get, you know, ask for the fees up front and a question mark. Who cares?
Yeah. Anyway, the next morning, Amanda opens her door to Sydney in an ill-fitting chartreuse cardigan she should burn immediately. You can see in the visual aids and agree with me. Sydney has appeared to say this, clipped in.
Amanda, I demand you drop the charges against Bobby.
You don't demand anything from me. And when are you going to learn that I'm always way ahead of you?
You got the charges dropped?
Peter's working on it. Any other unreasonable requests?
Nope. Thanks.
Sydney, why are you suddenly so involved with Bobby?
Well, what if I am? It's not like you care about him anymore.
You saw what he did to Peter.
Two grown men had a fight. Big deal. Bobby is just a big giant teddy bear.
One minute and extremely dangerous the next.
Only to his enemies. That would be Peter and you.
Oh,
and Alicia.
Sydney, this isn't a game. I broke up with Bobby because he lied to me.
Oh, Amanda, like that's the first time that's ever happened to you. First your father, then the FBI, Peter, Jack. Did you ever stop to think maybe it's not the men in your life, Amanda? Maybe it's you.
Listen, you little twit. You don't have a clue as to what you're getting involved in.
Amanda, take a pill. Things are different now. Bobby has a real woman at his side. Not just some career junkie girlfriend. Puts her own interests first.
Sorry, I had a momentary flash of compassion. Fortunately, it's past.
Amanda, Sydney, team up when?
Couple of queens.
Oh, love them.
Gorgeous.
Yep. So enjoyable to see them, like, at the top of their game, loving life and each other.
Uh-huh. Obviously loving this scene that it's like, you know, they have to know what's coming by the end of the season, even if we've forgotten what's coming. So they're just having fun. Yep. It's fun.
Over the cable company, Peter smugly drops Leif's $2 million check on Alicia's desk. Clip 11.
Sign the deal, kiss the check, and you're a cable tycoon. End a charade, Alicia. I'm free.
For what it's worth, I loved you, Peter.
I know you did.
Okay, Han.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I have to feel like the writers knew that we were all just waiting for, like, carbonite clamp to come down and cover him.
Yes, for sure. And just worth noting that they've put her in an electric blue suit for this scene, and it's one of the best things they've put her in. She looks great.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that in the visual aids, too. And then Amanda's coming down from her place in a very nice, simple red gown, which you can also see in the visual aids. Looks great on her. When Peter rolls up, excited to celebrate the end of their entanglement with Bobby, she has other plans, and he's like, clip 12.
Wait a minute. Plans more important than our long overdue reconciliation?
What reconciliation?
Oh, come on, Amanda, give me a break. I got you off the hook with the cable company. I divested my interest in the stocks and Alicia. And as a special bonus, my Dodger season tickets now belong to the DA as ransom for Bobby's freedom.
And that means I'm now obligated to jump into your arms out of relief and what else? Gratitude?
I didn't do this for my health, you know.
Well, it would have been nice if you did it because it was the right thing to do, not because getting me in bed was a door prize.
Oh, don't do this, Amanda. Please, don't do this.
You did it, Peter. Billy told me about your deal with Leif Thomason.
Leaf wanted to invest, and I wanted Alicia off of my back, and you're deflecting what this is really all about, what this has always been about.
Oh, don't start that fear of intimacy thing with me.
Well, what the hell else would you call it?
Fear of dishonesty? A logical and sensible fear of men who are incapable of telling the truth. You fit in that category. Hell, you own it.
Ah, you look terrific.
Ready to go?
Yeah, I was just saying goodbye to Peter. Goodbye, Peter.
Have a nice evening.
Don't ask.
We wouldn't dream of it.
No.
Because whatever you say won't make a lick of fucking sense.
It really won't. And the worst insult to Peter is to be like, the plans that I'm ditching you for are with Billy, because it's Billy.
Yeah, it's Billy. Still Billy.
So Allison comes in as Peter's leaving, and when she sees Billy and Amanda in their formal wear, she comments that it brings back memories. Billy snits that it's a business dinner, and when Amanda goes back up to get some paperwork, Allison wonders where this will all end, and he says it'll end right now if she just shuts up, but she has one question. Clip 13.
What exactly did this to you?
What would you say if I told you that Brooke's ghost visited me and cursed me to become just like her? You know, cold, heartless bastard, just out for himself.
I'd say it was a cheap excuse. And if you really wanted to find your way back, you could.
You're absolutely right. I could. But now that I'm on top and I'm loving it, why would I ever want to?
Ready.
See you, Allison. Have a nice night in front of the TV.
I bet she will. I always do.
Yeah, seriously. Unsick burn.
Yeah, she doesn't have to put on Spanx and a bra and go to some shitty dinner with you. That's a great night. Yeah. Sorry.
And not really get to drink because it's a business dinner. Pass over.
Also because she's an alcoholic. But well, yes.
Yeah.
And also, to back up even further in that clip when she says that his excuse about Brooke sounds like a cheap trick, it definitely was cheap based on what we saw in terms of special effects.
I mean, they were special, like all of God's children.
They were. And that's it for the episode. Let's close up by naming our MVP.
I mean, Leif, if he's just writing $2 million checks for public utilities, I guess he's doing pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is also horrible.
Yeah. I mean, Claire got a job and got to fuck Jake. So I'm going to say Claire.
Yeah,
it's a job
and she was drinking
still.
A mid-century cocktail and made it not seem like an affectation. So, yeah, I'm going to change mine to Claire.
Okay. Least valuable player. Alicia, they really sold her out in this episode.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, at least she got the $2 million, but Jesus.
$2 million to run a cable company. Yay.
Well, yeah, second prize is $2 million. I don't know.
Yep.
Next time on Again With This, Sydney gets a new roomie, Kimberly gets yet another identity, Richard's heel turn gets a new wrinkle, as it were, and Catwoman gets scumbagged by Billy. You'll have your claws out after seeing our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book, which makes a great gift. Follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm Joke of a Relationship, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is $2 million bluff call Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Snow White Opinion, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Whoops. Yeah, whoops.
Forgot about that one.